From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Well, we hope you enjoy the topics that we schedule on ABQ Connect. If your nonprofit group has an event or something you think would be appropriate for the show, maybe you're a regular listener and you're aware of a group or an organization that would be appropriate for the show, send the details. Address email to studio@klyt.fm. The call letter is real easy to remember. studio@klyt.fm. Couple of things before we jump into today's show and introduce our guest for today, I do want to make sure that you are aware of. Of course, we've mentioned for the last couple of weeks the earthquake in Turkey and relief efforts underway soon after the earthquake. Samaritan's Purse and working with partners to assess needs after the earthquake and aftershocks that killed thousands in Turkey weeks ago, as I mentioned. And then, of course, the four new earthquakes that hit just this past Monday. The website is SamaritansPurse.org, where you can find details and ways that you can assist with the relief efforts. Here's that website again, SamaritansPurse.org. And then I did want to, you know, it's so heavy to talk about things like that and all, you know, the death and destruction. Here's a praise report out of that. If you haven't heard yet, I think I heard this Monday, after 11 days, a 45-year-old man was found alive in critical condition and pulled from the rubble. That is, wow. So thank God for that. And then the other thing, real quick, want to make sure you know about coming up this weekend is the Saturday seminar with Dan Crabtree. This is a free seminar at Community of Grace Church in Albuquerque. That's on Comanche, west of Tramway. It's happening this Saturday, February 25th at 1 p.m. and will include a couple of sessions. The first session on social justice and Christian unity, and then the second session, practical eschatology. Dan Crabtree is the associate pastor of college ministry at Emmanuel Bible Church in Springfield, Virginia, with a B.A. from College of William and Mary, a Master's of Divinity from the Master Seminary, and he was the 2019 MacArthur Preaching Award recipient. The details about that Saturday seminar with Dan Crabtree are on the web at communityofgraceabq.org. All right, enough of me. Let's introduce our guest. Paul Gessing has been gracious enough to come in studio and update us again. Paul with the Rio Grande Foundation, and you'll find blogs from Paul at errorsofenchantment.com. Paul, you already busy with the Roundhouse today.
Yeah, exactly. They are in full swing up there in Santa Fe. This is getting towards crunch time where bills are flying around, and these are the bills that, if they've made it this far, have a real shot at passing. And one of the bills that I testified on just this morning, HB 426. And if you're interested in just kind of seeing all of the bills up there as they're being discussed and put through, nmlegis.gov. There's other websites I'm going to give you, but the legislature's own website is nmlegis.gov. HB 426 is the Clean Fuel Standards Bill. It's been kicked around in a few different ways over the last several sessions. It remains a top priority of this governor. Originally, as introduced in years previous, it would have directly mandated more use of things like ethanol in New Mexicans' gas tanks. It's been changed in a way that essentially allows the legislature to tell a group called the Environmental Improvement Board, which is nominated by the governor, put forth by the governor, and answers to the governor, that they want to impose regulations. So what exactly those regulations would look like, pushed through this legislation, is hard to say. But it's basically trying to get you out of your gas-powered vehicle into an electric vehicle, into a alternative fuel vehicle, into some other form of transportation. Again, pushing through government mandates and subsidies, et cetera, et cetera. So I was testifying on behalf of the Rio Grande Foundation against that particular bill.
Apparently, they don't know that Rush Limbaugh, prior to his death, had dibs on EIB.
Ha! Well, Environmental Improvement Board, that is something.
Sorry.
That's okay, yeah. Well, they also pass a clean car standard, the EIB did. So they really are a active entity. They've been empowered, as is often the case, because legislators don't want to take on some of these tough issues. So just a quirk in the way these regulations work. The Environmental Improvement Board last year passed a regulation requiring people to requiring a certain number of electric vehicles to be sold in the state of New Mexico. So it's
like a limited amount or
a mandated amount. So okay. More of them. They said, we want to sell, have more of these electric vehicles. And
I'm going to assume that was by percentage, not volume.
Percentage. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Are these the guys going to try to shut down my kitchen?
That's more of a federal thing, but yeah, there's always something going on.
I'm just asking.
Yeah. There's a lot going on.
Which, you know what, Paul? I mean, we should, right? This is something we you know, encourage each other, our listeners, to do. Ask the questions. And a lot of the answers actually found on the websites that Paul, you and others have provided. RioGrandeFoundation.org with information, of course, about the organization and places where you can support what this nonprofit organization is doing to keep us informed. And then Errors of Enchantment, which, I regularly, when you come in, Paul, print the articles from that website to be better acquainted with the things we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, Errors of Enchantment is, like you said, it's a blog. Both of them are worth checking out, and RioGrandeFoundation.org has links to the Freedom Index at the very top, and that is our own tracking mechanism for what's going on in Santa Fe. So as I'm looking at these bills and trying to parse through, kind of the Clint Eastwood thing, the good, the bad, the ugly, I rank the bills, and as they move through the process, when they hit the floor of one or two of the houses, they get votes, and they have rankings assigned to them by yours truly, and then those legislators wind up with rankings that show whether they are voting for limited government and individual liberty, or whether they are voting for bigger government, more interventionist government, more mandates, more subsidies, and the kinds of things that we really struggle against at the Rio Grande Foundation. So I'm looking at it right now. You can see the smiling faces of a vast majority of the legislators up there. If you know who your legislator is, that's great. Otherwise, use that tool at the nmlegis.gov site. That's the legislature's own site. You can put your address in and find out who is representing you and
what district you're in.
What district you're in. And yeah, you'll have a representative in the House. You'll have a senator in the state Senate, and you can talk to both of them.
Actually, I answered my own question too, because I started looking at your numbers and colors and things, and hadn't actually read through. There is the scoring key there, which I appreciate, because I didn't know what that meant, but you'll find that on the off to the right on the New Mexico Freedom Index page when you go there.
Yeah, at the top and to the right. Yeah, we We show that, you know, we rank every bill minus 8 to plus 8. As you can probably imagine, a minus 8 means it's really, really bad. And the clean fuel standard bill that I just discussed is right up there. I don't know offhand if that is an 8, but it's certainly one of the, yep, it's 8, or a minus 8, I should say. And so that bill is not on the floor yet. It's in a committee. So, you know, if you're not really familiar with the legislative process, what happens is that a bill gets introduced. So if it's Senator so-and-so, then Senator so-and-so's bill goes to the Senate committees. And if it passes on the floor, then it goes to the House committees and they push it through. But the most kind of questions and the most of the difficulties will happen in the respective body, because by the time it passes over to the other body, generally speaking, there's a little more deference that, hey, the other body has already looked at it, and vice versa for the House. So if it's a House bill, it'll go through the House committee process, voted on the floor, then it goes over to the Senate, and generally speaking, they give a little bit of a wider berth, and then, of course, it's voted on by the Senate, and unless there's changes made, then it goes to the governor for either signature or a veto, and that's the quick and dirty way it works. And we at the Rio Grande Foundation either head up to Santa Fe on a regular basis. I was up there Monday and testified on a piece of legislation that would have dramatically increased, like quintupling, taxes on alcohol, and that's a whole topic we can definitely discuss. But it was a bill introduced in the session as well in a committee. And then, you know, of course, eventually these bills are voted on the floor. That's where our vote tracking goes. We don't get to track committee votes. We track floor votes only.
Yeah, you know, I actually, Paul, want to make sure I thank you for that explanation, because I think sometimes we jump right into it. And even things as simple as SBHB and there's a lot of lay people, you know, and until recently myself, you know, I wasn't aware. And pretty soon, Paul, I'm going to probably encourage you to hire a production company and do a new Schoolhouse Rock.
There you go. Yeah. Well, unlike Washington and Congress, where you get a lot more executive orders and you get a lot of those omnibuses and different kinds of legislation, you know, to the credit of not just New Mexico, but most states, they do operate on a more Schoolhouse Rock traditional approach to legislation, where it is introduced, it goes through the process. So yeah, HB is House bill,
right.
SB is Senate bill, but then you get some tricky things. You get HJR, House Joint Resolution, that is a constitutional amendment. That goes through a little bit of a different process. So a constitutional amendment in New Mexico, it works differently in each state, but in New Mexico, it's got to be passed through the legislature, but then you get to vote on it if it is going to become an amendment. We had that with the permanent fund, the pre-K issue back in November. There was a handful of constitutional amendments.
Yeah.
You get SJRs as well, Senate Joint Resolution. You get House and Senate memorials. There's one that would encourage Congress. So SM8, Senate Memorial 8, it does not have the force of law, but it is a statement of preference on the body, the legislative body, their part to, in this case, SM8 would encourage Congress to admit Washington, D.C. as a state. I don't think that's a particularly great idea for a variety of U.S. constitutional reasons, but that's something that we actually rate. You know, a lot of memorials are, you know, there's one to, I believe, make the state's official smell something. I believe it's roasting green chilies, if I recall.
Sure.
There's all kinds of stuff.
Or wet desert has got a particular odor to it as well.
Yeah, but those are the kinds of things you get memorials for. You'll get, you know, Española Day at the legislature, various
sure.
cities and government. So anyway,
sure. Everyone wants to be recognized.
Oftentimes they're just kind of what I would call fluff, but for the people in these communities, it's not fluff, but we don't rank those kinds of things. We have no dog in the fight over whether they recognize Española or Farmington or Hobbs or Albuquerque or not. We're all part of the same state here in New Mexico.
Yeah, and since we mentioned Española, and we're going to go to a break, but before we do, let me just say this. In spite of, I'll be honest, I've often heard all the Española jokes, which every community probably has them, but I spent a little time in Española. I want to tell you, I got to be acquainted with a lot of great people in that area between, in that whole area up on the north part of the Rio Grande Valley. But a beautiful part of our state, I think, often is neglected as far as the attention towards some of the great things to go check out. But hey, we've got some great topics to cover, some things that will interest you. You do not want to go away and miss what we have to cover, some of the stuff being talked about up in the Roundhouse and around the state. We'll get to that after the break on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Thanks for joining us on ABQ Connect. We're spending some time today visiting with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul, of course, a regular contributor to errorsofenchantment.com. And Paul, I may have asked you in the past, are you the sole contributor there, or do you have others that write blogs?
These days I am pretty much the guy. Sometimes we have, either guest posters or we have different people involved in the foundation in various ways, shapes, and forms. But currently, a vast majority of those posts are coming from my keyboard and my writing. But it just depends on where things stand with the foundation. We might have an intern who's really great at writing, or whatever staff may be interested and able to write things. It just depends.
Well, it's always an easy read and good information. I was looking at some of the things that we printed off to talk about today, and I was actually just having a conversation this morning. Environmental type stuff, kind of. I had poured some water for one thing, and it turns out I didn't need to do that. So I, instead of pouring it down the drain, found a place to use the water. Whether you water a plant or put it in the coffee maker for the next cup of coffee or next pot of coffee. I don't have any study on this, but just life. There seems to be sometimes I believe our responsibility to be good citizens towards the creation that's been given to us is made very political, where we should be good stewards of what we've been given. I believe that, and we read in the Bible that the earth groans for redemption. And anyway, that being said, even when the city imposed a ban on plastic bags a while back, even though I went and got some bags to use at the grocery store, I tell you what, man, 22 days did not create a habit for me.
I agree with you 100% about being good stewards, and certainly in terms of water here in the desert, you tend to be very sensitive to what's going on in terms of, are we getting enough rain? Are we getting good snowpack? Have we gone a few weeks without rain? That kind of thing. It really is something that you're sensitive to in a way.
I was really interested about your blog that you wrote on plastic bags that we're going to cover, and I think it's great information.
I appreciate that. This whole plastic bag issue has kind of come and gone and come and gone again and again in the local political situation here, where we had a bag ban passed. If you'll recall, before COVID, the city council passed that. Then COVID happened, and there was a lot of concern about the potential for viral spread on those materials, especially if you're using those bags again and again and again. Now, most studies I've seen, you know, it takes a while to study these things. You don't just have, oh, well, that's not going to happen. It is true. It is absolutely true that viruses can spread through those reusable bags. And it's something to be very concerned about, because it's not COVID necessarily that would spread. It's leaky chicken packages.
Oh, right.
That's what you really got to be aware of. And anyway, that's what the studies have shown. But then...
Well, the bags I would purchase to use instead of the plastic bags, I'm going to have the same issue with... and I just don't see most people taking the time to, with warm water and sudsy soap,
right?
You know, clean out those more permanent or semi-permanent bags we were encouraged to get.
And what is the environmental impact of using those materials and water and all the whole nine yards? That's the thing, is that it's easy to say X is green, but when it comes to actual implementation, it is hard to actually make that case. And I agree with people who say, well, we shouldn't use too many plastic bags. I try to reuse those plastic bags, either as trash can liners or for my dogs.
Yeah.
Anyway, the fact is that SB 243 is a bill. It's actually being heard later this afternoon. Now, when that exactly will be, they always put 1:30 on the calendar, which would mean shortly. But this time of the session, when the floor sessions go on longer, chances are it will be later on this afternoon, 3, 4, 5 o'clock, depending on what else is being heard in the committee. But the bill number is SB 243. And, this would ban plastic bags all across the state of New Mexico. I think it's problematic for a lot of the reasons and more we just discussed. It'll be in the, it's in the Senate Budget and Tax, Senate Tax Business and Transportation. It doesn't look like it's up today, but it will be up in the next few days in that particular committee. Again, plastic bags, they have their purpose. What it really gets down to is what you said about stewardship and people being responsible. You don't want to be the person that lets the plastic bag out and that gets stuck in a tree somewhere. You want to be somebody who leaves the planet cleaner and better than where it was when you showed up on it. And I think if you have that in mind, and if more people in our population, whether here in New Mexico, here in Albuquerque, or across the globe, took that to heart, then we wouldn't have to deal with a lot of this legislation. Because, you know, I get where people come from. They see those bags, they see litter and trash of all kinds, and they want to do something. Well, you know, you can only legislate so much in our society. Ultimately, it boils down to personal responsibility. And, you know, speaking of shopping, you see the blogs, the memes, I think, is the way they put it, you know. Can you be a self-sustaining democracy? And one of the tests that people cite for that is, do you return your grocery cart at the grocery store to the corral, or do you just throw it out into the parking lot for other people to have to avoid and deal with, and maybe the wind to carry into other people's cars? Are you responsible with your grocery cart, just like you would be with your plastic bag, or are you irresponsible? You know, the New Mexico legislature has a tendency to believe that all New Mexicans are children that need to be hectored and controlled and told what to do constantly. And I'm of the opinion that that is not the appropriate way to govern. So look at SB 243, the ban on plastic bags statewide.
Yeah, it was good information. You kind of covered it, but it was interesting to hear about the quote from NPR radio. Well, that's redundant, isn't it? NPR.
But kind of like Rio Grande River.
Yeah, that's right. But NPR, the report that said led the cities and people banning using the plastic bags led to about 40 million fewer pounds of plastic trash per year. But people who use, like you mentioned, we would use them for a lunchbox or to line a small garbage. And sales of garbage bags actually skyrocketed when that happened after those plastic grocery bags were banned. So, it's like... And the other thing that was part of a conversation this morning, and again, I don't know how true this is, but it feels that way. And we should be good stewards. It does seem, though, very political when the environment comes in, and somewhere in there, I have to imagine it's because if it doesn't go this way, some corporation or someone is going to not be making a whole bunch of money.
Yep.
And there's much more to it than just being good stewards, but. Like you said, Paul, and I already said, what we can do is be good stewards with what we're given and do our best and read up on these Senate bills and House bills and let our legislature know how we feel about it. All right. Let's go ahead and press on. And we'll take a break after we talk about why not reduce or eliminate corporate taxes here in New Mexico. And I love that with that blog that you put on Errors of Enchantment, you included a real easy to digest graph showing how high corporate income taxes are across the country.
Yeah, so people have a love-hate relationship with corporations. The fact is that corporations are made up of people. They're just businesses that provide goods and services that we want. Sometimes they upset liberals. Sometimes they upset conservatives. For a variety of reasons on both sides of the aisle, there's things that corporations do that bother us. But what we can all agree on is that we need to diversify New Mexico's economy away from the twin pillars or the two pillars, not twin necessarily, of oil and gas and government, federal government. We need to make New Mexico a more economically diversified state. And corporations look very closely at a variety of policies. One of them is the taxes that you impose on them. And New Mexico has a relatively high corporate tax rate, 5.9%. Our neighbors in Texas have a zero tax rate because they don't tax personal income in Texas. But every other state around us, as is often the case, has a lower tax on corporations.
That's going to obviously affect economic development. I mean, we've got, people that
exactly.
are trying to encourage businesses to choose New Mexico, New Mexico's workforce.
Exactly.
And this makes
so it difficult. HB 322 is a bill addressing the corporate income tax, but instead of reducing it, it shifts some things around and actually raises the overall income tax on corporations because we have a 4.8% rate, which kicks in at $500,000 or kicks in until $500,000 in profits. After that, 5.9 kicks in. The bill HB 322 would impose the 5.9% rate at all levels of the corporate tax structure. And I don't think that's going to help diversify New Mexico's economy and develop new businesses who are located here who could get bigger and provide more jobs and economic impact for the state or who might move here. And we want to have those kinds of things happen. And our corporate income tax generates between $300 and $400 million for the state every year, which seems like a decent amount of money, but when you've got a surplus of $3.6 billion.
I was going to say, remember, they've already got plenty, Paul.
Yeah, this should be something. It doesn't have to go to zero. It could go down to 2%, 3%, something like that. And the bill I just cited to you, HB 322, is introduced by a Republican. So especially if you're a Republican, you should be focusing on lowering overall tax burdens and diversifying our economy, not raising taxes.
Yeah, I mean, you said it by one or two, and Paul, by doing that, just looking at the graph you gave us, you know, by one would put us, instead of at 5.9, 4.9, same as Arizona, very close to what Utah is doing, a little higher than Colorado. And, you know, if you said by 2%, that's closer to Oklahoma. We can be thankful that we're not looking at Kansas, Nebraska, or Iowa to compare to, along with others in the Midwest. Wow. But it's great information. Again, if you haven't gone to the website, heirsofenchantment.com, what I'm talking about is I just glance at this. It's a map of the United States with the corporate income tax rates. So when we say 5.9, you know, look where we are regionally, and you know, why should ours be that much higher than our neighbors?
Yeah, and real quick, we are in a very competitive region. You look at a lot of policies, corporate taxes, income taxes in general, all kinds of other things. New Mexico tends to stick out from its neighbors because we have always followed the government path, and if not the government path, the oil and gas path, which you don't have to be business friendly to have oil and gas under your territory. Unfortunately, what you need is good public policies, free markets, a functional education system, low crime, and all the things that government needs to do better in the state of New Mexico in order to compete with states like Arizona, Colorado, Utah, Texas, and Oklahoma, states that tend to be more attractive to people moving there. And that's why you see the population shifting, in addition to the gorgeous weather that you have in some of those places, but we also have in New Mexico.
That's right.
They tend to skip over us and move to places like Arizona and Texas, which doesn't quite have our fabulous weather, but is very free market.
All right. Well, we're spending time again in the full hour today visiting with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation, and the two websites we typically give out, want to make sure you have them, riograndefoundation.org and heirsofenchantment.com. Some great resources, great information, and certainly what you need to know if you're going to be involved and let your legislature know where you stand on some of these issues and policies. So, hey, we're going to continue right after the break. ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE.
Always comparing ourselves to other states. Yeah, we just did it in the last segment as we looked at the corporate income tax rate around the country. You know, it as we look at how other states handle things, it really hopefully adds to the conversations that go on. You hope, Paul. Paul Gessing is in studio with us from the Rio Grande Foundation. But you hope, Paul, that it would bring conversations up in the roundhouse, and including, you know, our comparison to Mississippi and education. That's been something we've talked about on this show several times.
Yeah. We've talked about education, and just to quickly update, unfortunately, not much is happening in terms of education reform in the legislative session, but it doesn't mean that, you know, we should be happy with dead last place and the status quo situation we have in education here in New Mexico. But we've talked about Mississippi, as you said, and Mississippi, a state with a lot of similar socioeconomic challenges to what we face here in New Mexico, a lot of poverty, systemic poverty, generational poverty, a lot of, you know, real challenges that they face, that we face as well. Mississippi has successfully moved the needle, as they say, in terms of education. And while we've talked about it pretty extensively in this forum and quite frankly on our blog posts, and I've had a podcast on it, and we've really made Mississippi a talking point because of their success and prevalent, you know, relevant similarities to New Mexico. The Albuquerque Journal, the newspaper, state's largest newspaper, decided to do a in-depth analysis of what happened in Mississippi and why they were able to turn things around. And it was on the front page of the paper on Tuesday. And it's, you know, I think they did a lot of good work in this article and highlighted the reasons Mississippi moved in the right direction, why we, they didn't do so much of a good job of explaining why New Mexico didn't do the same things, because we could have. We had a governor pushing a lot of the same policies. Susana Martinez wanted to embrace the early childhood education, especially on reading, phonics-based learning, and really rethinking the approach to education, social promotion, eliminating that. Unfortunately, we didn't do that in New Mexico. And while there are things going on that have a resemblance to what Mississippi is doing, we don't know yet because they're so new in the process and we're not doing everything Mississippi has done. But the fact is that Mississippi's done a lot. Mississippi is improving, and we would be well served to really explore and examine that up in Santa Fe.
And while we're on the topic, you mentioned literacy, and I was going to actually bring that up because it is one of the things that I remember in the conversation standing out, going back to some of the ideas Governor Martinez had when in office, you know, by increasing, by focusing on improving literacy, that would have an, and I think it may have been New Hampshire that they were looking at the time that had really focused on that and seen some growth in education. But I do want to throw this out there because it's a guest we've had on the show. Reed West is a adult literacy program here in New Mexico. And if you need or you know someone who would be in need of assistance like that, and it's not just for learning to read better, read and write better, but computer literacy and other skills. And the reason, Paul, I'm bringing that up is, you know, we're talking now here, what we're looking at is stats comparing to Mississippi. I think it's fourth grade through eighth grade. Is that right?
Yeah. Really, it's fourth and eighth grade.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Fourth and eighth.
Because that is the NAEP, which is the gold standard of testing.
However, in order for those kids to perform better when they're home and needing assistance, that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. The low adult literacy rate in New Mexico is part of the reason, I believe, we find lower scores on those NAEP tests. And readwest.org is doing great work. It's just Reed West, but do go to the website, readwest.org, and find out what kind. And they're a free service. They're a nonprofit organization, which, by the way, like the Rio Grande Foundation and these organizations that do so much work for us, we do encourage you to consider a gift to them to help support what they're doing. But readwest.org, and then, as I already mentioned, riograndefoundation.org, and the information, including the article Paul wrote about the ABQ Journal report on the write-up on Mississippi education success, that is at heirsofenchantment.com.
Well, and just one more thought on that particular topic. Too often, people involved in education here in New Mexico, and I'll specifically call out State Senator Mimi Stewart, who once said, "We don't know how to teach impoverished kids." This is one of the union-backed people. She's been involved in education policy. She's one of the quote-unquote leaders of education policy. And you know, there is a tendency to want to throw up your hands and say, you know, kids have broken families. They have all these challenges. They don't have internet access. They don't have engaged parents or educated parents. You simply can't get them to learn. Well, I say to that, in New Mexico, we're spending $15,000 a kid to educate them. If you're just going to throw up your hands and say that the system in place can't make a difference in educating the kids, why does that system exist?
All of the kids.
Yeah, all of the kids. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to succeed in every single instance. There's just no 100% policy that works when you're dealing with public policy or human behavior. So what we need, though, is to take best practices from other states. This is one of, I would say, the core things that we do at the Rio Grande Foundation. We scour the country looking for good policies that make a difference in states. And this particular example from Mississippi has been discussed by us over the last year and a half, discussed in the New York Times. Now it's been discussed in the Albuquerque Journal. So it's time for the Lujan Grisham administration to consider really just taking Mississippi and trying to embrace what they've done and succeeded with.
Yeah, well, it apparently is working there, and God willing, the same things applied here. We would see a difference in those scores and in our kids' education here in New Mexico. Hey, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, a little bit more with Paul Gessing of the Rio Grande Foundation. The website, again, riograndefoundation.org, and a lot of the content we're covering today found in the blogs that primarily Paul has written at errorsofenchantment.com. We'll be back with more right after the break on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There is still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
All right. Well, we are visiting today again with the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul Gessing is in the studio with us, and we covered a variety of topics, which, by the way, watch for the archive of today's show on the web at abqconnect.online. And, you know, in the same way, before we jump back into our final topic for today, in the same way that we encourage you on these topics to reach out to your legislature, and let them know where you stand on the various topics, we also want to remind you that the programs that you hear on KLYT the programs you hear are put where they are by nonprofit organizations that put the product on KLYT. And if you haven't reached out to the programs that you regularly listen to that are heard all over the country, thank goodness they're on this station in New Mexico, make sure to go to their websites and let them know you're listening, and let them know what an impact it has in your life. You'll find the complete lineup of the programs heard on KLYT on the website at klyt.fm. All right, Paul, let's jump into our final discussion on today. Today from the, I think this, isn't this a blog from
Arizona Chapman? Albuquerque Journal article.
Okay. I'll let you jump into it, though. The headline is UNM may lift COVID vaccine mandate.
Yeah. Now, before I jump into the article and, you know, my take on it and some of the stuff that we've written on it, and so far I haven't posted anything up at Errors of Enchantment yet, but if you do go into that website, you will see extensive discussions about things relating to COVID when COVID was really hitting our country. And it's been the position of the Rio Grande Foundation that government should not mandate medical procedures such as, but not limited to, vaccines or anything like a vaccine that you would have to take. Unfortunately, in the case of UNM, UNM still has a vaccine mandate in place for not just administration and teachers, but students as well. And to their credit, I suppose, they are finally considering eliminating that vaccine mandate. And some of the discussion is interesting. And, you know, I'm not a medical professional, but, you know, they talk about, they still recommend it, but they also note that you can still transmit the virus. Some of this stuff was verboten on social media or regular media, and you just simply could not talk about it publicly for long stretches of time throughout the pandemic. But
until Elon bought Twitter.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that's part of it. But the article is definitely worth a read for the simple fact that it is the closest you will get an institution like UNM to admitting they were wrong. They can say that people who left the university for refusing to get the shots will be admitted back. It talks about the adverse side effects, including myocarditis. And again, I'm not a scientist, but this has all been well documented. It's good that we see UNM at least tacitly admitting that there are issues. There are issues with any medical procedure. Anytime you do something to your body, there are things that can result from that. And our position is not that you should never do anything. You shouldn't take cold medicine or get your ears pierced or do something, whatever it may be. Our position is that the government should not be in the business of forcing things, especially experimental drugs on you. And it's a simple principled position that has been borne out, just like our skepticism of the efficacy of masks, as we talked about last week, and the closure of businesses, the closure of schools. We can point to a pretty strong track record there. A lot of people, you know, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis among them, but a lot of people took a heck of a lot of heat during COVID for skepticism on those four points. And I think we were being borne out by what is happening. And so I applaud and encourage UNM to lift its vaccine mandate. And this article in the Albuquerque Journal is as good of a indicator that they realized they kind of screwed up on this.
And this came out, by the way, that the headline reads, as I did mention, UNM may lift COVID vaccine mandate. An article by Ryan Botel, a journal staff writer at the Albuquerque Journal. This article was posted on Tuesday, this past Tuesday, February 2021.
It was posted online on Tuesday. I believe it appeared in the print edition on Wednesday. So just yesterday. So it's a relatively new development there at UNM. And we haven't, and it's kind of one of my bones to pick with everybody from our governor to a lot of other people who pretty clearly now the data has shown that a lot of the decisions made early on in the pandemic were misguided and were targeting your freedoms individually or as a business owner in ways that were unnecessary. And, you know, we at the Rio Grande Foundation, we have a pretty high bar. You know, when people in government say, I'm going to violate your freedom in X, Y, and Z way, it's not that we always say absolutely no, heck no, that's never a good idea, but we demand pretty strong evidence for those decisions being made. You know, somebody can say, well, you need to move out of this particular area because, you're going to be testing nuclear weapons in the area. Well, that's a good reason to force a decision on somebody. But
A big train wreck.
Train wreck. There you go. That's something that's obviously relevant. And I just wish, and I think that's the thing, is that people need to be skeptical when government starts mandating that they do and not do certain things.
Be informed.
Yeah. And yeah. I, you know, Calvary Church right here, we got, you know, mixed up in that whole thing when they had indoor services and the governor was telling them not to. That was around Christmas time. I think that was 2020. So I applaud Skip and the leadership here for standing firm against that particular mandate because, they're vindicated. They were on the side of the science. You know, you often hear religious people being talked about as non-scientific.
Yeah, but there's nothing. Science isn't the enemy,
right.
But correct or incorrect or misused. You know, and that's actually a conversation that Ray Mondragon, who comes on regularly from the New Mexico Creation Science Fellowship. And it's in their title, you know, in the title of their organization, science. There is biblical science. It's not a bad word.
Yeah, and all I'm asking is that before you start trying to boss people around and use government power to tell them they have to do things, you need to come up with very, very solid scientific evidence using, you know, random controlled studies and those kinds of things.
Well, and it was, you have to, and you have to sign something that says you won't hold accountable the people who created the product we're putting into you for what might happen.
Yeah.
So
we'll just move on. Hopefully UNM does indeed lift their COVID vaccine mandate. That would be the right thing to do. And giving jobs back to the dozen or so people who were not allowed to work for the university in the wake of that, I think would be the right thing to do. And they might deal with a lawsuit as well, because those 12 people may decide that they want to get some compensation for their troubles.
Well, thanks to Paul Gessing for joining us again from the Rio Grande Foundation, riograndefoundation.org, and errorsofenchantment.com. Paul, thanks so much. Let's do it again next month.
Thank you, Steve. Yep.
All right. Thanks for tuning in to ABQ Connect.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.